Welcome to the Black Vinyl Collective. I am Jesse. With me again are Trav and Seth. Hello, fellas.
Hello.
Greetings from Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania.
And also from Pennsylvania. Ah, oof.
No one cares. I'm first.
Good point. Back to you, Colorado.
So, we've already been talking for a few minutes before the show started, and we've been talking about some of our favorite records and blah, blah, blah. Like, actual records, vinyl records. And one thing that comes up a lot, one thing that comes up in my world a lot is I get 100 emails to Veritas Vinyl saying, how do I make a record? Can you tell, you know, can I have 50 records and, you know, things like that? Why can't my band press 3 hours on one LP? So we thought we'd talk about that today.
Why can't our album of 3 hours in length be pressed on one LP?
For a lot of reasons.
Okay.
But there
Thanks
is,
for listening.
There has
no,
been...
there's more.
There has been a lot of resurgence in vinyl lately. For a lot of us, it never really went away. Especially, I'm more of a punk guy, I guess, than a metal guy. But definitely within the punk scene, like, vinyl was always the cool thing, even... You know, it's like if your band had a 7-inch, then you were like a real band. It just like added some legitimacy. And I know there's a lot of other genres that even when vinyl wasn't really cool, it definitely hung on there. But a lot of people are coming back to it because of big media resurgence and people just enjoying it for a lot of different reasons. And that's good as a record label guy, I guess. But... it brings a lot of people are new to vinyl once again. Like even people who had records before. Trav, you had records forever ago, but then, you know, a few years back the vinyl bug kind of bit you again and you started rebuilding your collection, right?
I dumped all of my, I just got to a point where I was like, you know, apartment hopping and moving around, and I just thought, this is stupid. I'm never sitting down in front of a record player. It doesn't fit my life right now. And this was kind of before the whole it comes with a digital download thing. It was, when you bought a 7-inch, you got those. And that was it. So I chucked them all on eBay, sold everything, kept a couple. But and then now I'm like, I have a house and a studio, and I'm like, I kind of miss sitting down and staring at my record player. So yeah, I've gotten back into it. Like I'm probably only 4 years back into it, maybe.
What was it that drove you back into it?
Finally setting up my stereo, like, you know, when you move into a house, for those of us that have moved into a house, moved an entire family, you don't really get your, oh, I don't want to use the term man cave because, ugh, but when you finally get your corner of the house set up, it's like 3 years after you move in, and I just finally got around to doing that and dusted off the record player, and I was like, damn, I miss doing this, you know?
I think it's hilarious that you just said that 3-year time period, because I'm almost exactly 3 years in my new house, and I've had my record player set up, but just, like, over the holiday weekend, over Christmas and stuff, did I really kind of get it dialed in. I always had a grounding problem and whatever, but it's actually my little, like, living slash listening room is really dialed, and it's been almost exactly 3 years.
There you go. The math all shakes out.
Sometimes it's like a, you know, really cool, you know, you see a picture of a cool splatter vinyl or split color or something that kind of dragged you back in. What was the first record you bought when you got back into the vinyl game?
All right, I gotta embarrass myself. This wouldn't be a podcast without it. Somewhere in the ballpark of 97 or 98. Kind of got this this hankering to get Advent of a Miracle from Strong Arm on vinyl. It became like my favorite hardcore album. It kind of still is, and I bought that one. Why do you ask?
I seem to remember some silly anecdote surrounding Advent of a Miracle.
All right, dragging it out of me. when I first got it, I wasn't aware of the technology of how many different colors and swirls and all this other, you make it look like anything you want. And when I got Advent, I opened it up and it was brown and murky and it had like marble swirl on it, and frankly it looked like crap. I didn't like the color of it at all. I was expecting a black record. I just wanted a black one, you know. So I sent it back, and I was like, can you guys please send me a record that doesn't have a problem with it? And I, to this day, I think about how hard they must have laughed. And they were probably all fighting over it, like, oh my God, he sent Pekka Brown one, I'll take it. But I'm an idiot. I had no idea. Like, I know, I had picture discs from Iron Maiden and Stryper back in the day and everything. I knew you could do that on vinyl. And I know that you could press them different colors and everything, but when it comes to like making them marbly and swirly and stuff like that, I just didn't know. And I still don't really understand how they do that.
That's really...
There's my anecdote, okay? Are you happy?
I am happy. I laugh so hard.
I bet someone at Tooth and Nail like printed that out and put it up in their cubicle.
Good.
That was the office memo that week. Hey, check out what this jackass did. He set back his brown vinyl.
Well, and back around 97, 98, they had a handful of employees too. So I'm sure there's like 5 people there now, but...
Yeah, I'm sure somebody laughed at me, but whatever. I don't care. Hey, if my letter is hanging inside Tooth and Nail, that's the closest I ever came to getting their attention with anything else I ever did in my life. So yeah, I had to do something.
Fair enough.
It's probably for the best.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's actually the marbled brown vinyl, or marbled opaque vinyl, is one of the noisiest colors of vinyl you can actually get. Most people are drawn into the fanciness of colored vinyl and stuff, but really most record pressing plants and stuff will publish a scale of record noise as far as like surface noise levels, and black is by far the lowest, and they kind of start going up to translucence or, you know, a little less, and then the opaques and the swirls and things like that start getting more and more surface noise. So I, you know, colored vinyl is cool, but I like black vinyl too.
I don't have a preference. I think there's some amazing looking colored vinyl out there. I bought my Secret Cutter album is the orangest thing I've ever bought. It looks like a traffic cone, piece of candy or something. It's so loud and obnoxious. And I think it's amazing that they can make records look like that nowadays. And they pressed it all independent. They went to a small little company that kind of like Veritas. And when I cracked that thing open, I was like, dang, I didn't see that coming. So I think it's kind of neat, but honestly, I don't sit there and stare at the stupid thing while it's playing. I play it, and then I'm running around the room trying to relax and sit still, so it kind of doesn't matter, but I don't know. I do think they're kind of cool.
Yeah, it's definitely cool. Definitely kind of drags people in. It kind of renews some interest to it, and I've never met anybody who's sent back a colored record, but I definitely meet people.
All right.
I definitely meet people who have not heard of colored vinyl, even, you know, so it is a new thing. But it must
well,
be
I'm happy to be, I'm happy to be the first. Let's let's play a strong arm song. Get me out of this, so I can go wipe this egg off my face.
All right, here's some strong arm.
Body, right down the line.
Yeah, so talking about the resurgence of vinyl in 2014, it was definitely up. Sales of vinyl grew 52% in 2014. 9.2 million copies on vinyl were sold in 2014. It was up from 6.1 million the year before. And that's from a Billboard article.
Like 20 of those were shipped out of my house.
Right. Right. I'm sure they were all count. Yeah. I'm sure none of them got lost in that shuffle. Well, that's it. Go ahead.
I have a question about that. What are they basing the 9.2 million copies on? Like if I go buy a used vinyl at the record shop near me,
that doesn't count. No.
Right. So how much of that is going on that no one keeps track of?
Well, I mean, I think for the purpose of this, in, you know, yearly album sales is just this many albums were put out in a year. This were how many were bought. That's what they're basing it on.
Got it. But how do you know? I know
because of sound scan, because all the UPC codes that are scanned and stuff.
Right. I mean, how do you know how many used cassettes and CDs and vinyl people have bought over the years? It's like untraceable.
Yeah, I have no idea. I think it only counts, right, for new sales.
Yeah, right. I mean, I bet I bought, you know, 10 records off Discogs or something that, you know, weren't new, and none of my vinyl sales get counted anywhere. And I know there's, you know, every time I turn around, there's some other boutique label, and it's not barcode scanned and, you know, all that crap. So I suspect the number's probably quite a bit higher, you know, even if we're discounting the used stuff. I suspect the new stuff is quite a bit higher than estimated.
I've been seeing record stores popping up around, which encourages me, but it also kind of makes me feel like, well, you're just stealing from the guys that have been here the entire time. I know you can't have the entire city function on one record store, but I do feel like other ones are just popping up because, unfortunately, this has become a trend.
I don't know that I'd say unfortunately. I mean, I agree with you. It certainly is a trend right now. And, I mean, a lot of purists will say, vinyl never left, man. And, you know, it didn't. I mean, that's why there's still pressing plants, and that's why there's always been records since records were starting to be made. But it's not always been here like this. I mean, everybody's got a 7-inch or a 12-inch or something out these days, which I like. I enjoy the vinyl format, obviously, but it certainly is hot right now. It certainly is a trend.
Mm-hmm.
How about this nugget? In 2014, there were 94 albums that sold at least 10,000 copies. So that's like new releases in 2014. 94 albums sold 10,000.
Wow.
That's up from 46 albums the year before in 2013.
So that almost doubled, just like vinyl overall doubled from 2013 to 2014. Albums that sold at least 10,000 copies on vinyl almost doubled. That's amazing. I didn't see that coming.
Because, I mean, there's some... there's popular mainstream bands these days that first week numbers are like 3,000. That's like CD and digital and everything else.
Right.
So for a one vinyl record to sell 10,000, that's
incredible. Yeah. And I think one of the things I really like about the analog format, whether it's record or CD, tape or whatever, when I was, you know, I grew up on tapes. I mean, I had records and stuff I'd buy from, you know, garage sales. I'd buy a whole stack of classic rock records for $2 or something. But everything I bought new was cassette because, you know, I didn't have a CD player. And the thing about a cassette was, you could fast forward and be like, oh, is that the next song? Oh, no. Oh, I got to listen to the last 30 seconds of this song to get to the next one.
Right.
It prevented people from being like, oh, let me go to the single. And it created a whole album. And I think the argument also can be made that there's not a lot of full albums really being put out. It is a lot of singles with a lot of fillers. But I like that. And when I did get into CDs finally, it really bummed me out that I knew the first four songs better than the rest, because like a cassette tape, you put it in and play, and when you stopped it, when you had to leave, you came back right where you left off. You knew all the songs equally. You know, at least that's how I did it. And with a record or a CD player, oftentimes you do know the first three songs better. And
right.
Obviously iTunes playlists and stuff, you can, I like this album off this song, you know, this song off this album and this one, you can put together a playlist, or you could play just the one hit song over and over, and that's great and everything, but I like the whole album.
Yeah, I think that's the best that's the best format. I mean, everybody keeps referring it to an album. You know, we're putting out an album, we're doing an album, and no one ever even presses anything. It's just digital. Well, this is where this is the format that started it all. It's the album, you know? And you're supposed to sit down and look at a giant square foot of artwork and take it in for 38 minutes or whatever and make it an experience. Now it is. It's bite-sized nuggets. You just crank out a single, and we'll worry about a whole full length after that. We'll just make whatever we have to make it consider it a full-length album. I don't even understand why people bother putting out full-length albums anymore. Unless you're going to make an entire album, like a cohesive thing. Not a concept album, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But why can't it's a huge, name a huge rock band. Why can't
Foo Fighters.
Okay. Why does Foo Fighters have to do, that's actually a bad example because Foo Fighters still do amazing things and they're always thinking outside the box, but we'll use them as the example. Why can't Foo Fighters just put out one song? What's the problem? Like, they're big enough to be able to sustain that and tell people, hey, here's a tweet. We have a new song on iTunes. Go buy it. They're going to sell it. Why do they have to bother going through putting out a full length anymore?
I think that's a question a lot of people are asking, and I've seen that, you know, in articles and things on various social media where so-and-so from this band says, we're done putting out records. We're going to do two-song singles or short EPs or something. And most recently, I just saw, I don't know, some metal / you know, rock aggregate site that said, you know, Dexter Holland says, we're only putting out singles. And, I mean, okay, great. I mean, I guess people are moving towards that. And I don't know. I want to hate that, but whatever. I still prefer a full-length album. If somebody wants to put out singles, I guess put out singles. Whatever.
Can I embarrass myself a second time and ask who Dexter Holland is? I don't know who that is.
Can I embarrass myself by saying it's the singer from Offspring? It's embarrassing that I know that.
I'm happy I didn't know who that was.
Yeah, you've unembarrassed yourself from like one or two previous things that embarrassed you. Well done,
just when you think I can't say something more embarrassing, I go and say something like that and
totally redeem yourself.
Can I chime in too on the single though versus the album? Please?
No, you may not.
Great. I'll move on to the next point. 57% of no. I don't like the single concept. I don't like for me, I'd rather put on I put on an album and listen to it all the way through most mm-hmm. of the time. Singles I guess might work for the people that love shuffle, which I can't stand, but for me I want the album. And I also think, too, it might be because look at what iTunes did with raising the price of singles to $1.29. Because if you buy the whole album, it's a better deal. And if you buy the whole album, you know, more of that money goes towards the label and the artist.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you keep putting out 99-cent songs for $1.29, I don't know, maybe it's just harder to sustain that way.
I agree with you, first of all. I prefer a full album. I do like to do shuffle. I do like to make playlists sometimes, but I really am like a, here, let's listen to this album kind of a guy. But the field I work in, do it with music and audio video and, you know, bigger homes and stuff, I'm constantly asked to help set up people's iTunes libraries and stuff. And when you actually get it set up, every song in their library is a single. It's Rolling in the Deep. It's some single by Pink. And it's All About That Bass. It's 100 singles. And I guess, I mean, people can't... I'm guilty of this myself. Like, I'll be scrolling through Twitter or Facebook feed, and there's a video link there, and it's playing, and I can't even be bothered to click on it to see it. I just kind of want to see it for half a second. I don't think people can sit through an album these days.
I think...
Well...
I sit around with friends, and you crack open your laptops and go, Seth and I have done this before. You know, we play tennis. I'll play a song, then you play a song, then I play a song, then you play a song. We don't even get all the way through the song sometimes. Hey, check this out. Listen to what this band sounds like. Okay, I kind of get the idea. 25 seconds in. Okay, that's enough. Yeah. You know, it's turned us into a... Instead of stopping and smelling the roses, it's like this entire system seems to me like it's set up to just as soon as I hit play, I already have to be thinking about where I'm going next instead of enjoying what I'm listening to.
Yeah, I fully understand that.
It's gone. Like sitting down and being like, okay, this is a thing. Like I didn't sit down and listen to Battery. And then, okay, that's enough. Now I'm going to put in a Megadeth tape. No, it's Master of Puppets time. I listen to the whole thing front to back. And like Jesse said, when Mom calls for dinner and I'm halfway through Damage Incorporated, click, and then I'll come right back to this. I'll be right back. Hold on, cassette. You know, don't move. It's gone. That doesn't happen anymore. It's a shame.
My absolute favorite thing about the vinyl format is that in my life, in my world, I've always got headphones in. I've always got my iPod, and I love digital. Like, if somebody tries to take digital from me for some reason, like, there'll be a fight. And, you know.
Oh, do you mean by Apple discontinuing the Classic?
Oh, I still have a Classic, but not all my music fits on it anyway. But, no, I just mean if, you know, if for some reason I were to lose digital, I'd be really sad about it.
Sure.
But that being said, I love the vinyl makes me come and sit down and listen to it because I put it on in the living room and I start listening to it and I can't walk away with it still in my headphones. Like I walk around work all day with one earbud in, you know, and that's great. And I love that I can have my music with me, but when I have to sit down and listen to it and I go, I need to get up and go do this other thing that I'm distracted by in life. You know what? I want to hear the rest of this song first, or, you know, you sit there and you have to kind of enjoy it, and you can, you know, I put on a record and we do the dishes or we clean up after dinner or whatever, and that's fine too, but it makes you focus on the music and, you know, smell the roses, as you were saying, and I really appreciate that.
Something about having the tangible product in your hand, too. Think about how many albums I've bought over the past 10 years I just have a file. I just have this thing that pops up on the screen when I ask for it. And then when I hit play, it's in my ears. I don't have the artwork. I don't have all those liner notes that I used to sit around and read. And I don't even know what a record producer does, but I do see that this guy produced three different bands that I'm into. Oh, that's worth looking into. I wish I had Google back then, you know. But just something about having it. I physically have this organic piece of material that has music on it. Even if it's cassette, even if it's a CD, it's just, that's gone.
Speaking of physical format, I got a really good record in the mail on Monday. I got a great record in the mail. And if I can steal Seth's bit, I can give you guys some Skull Toaster trivia about it, and you can guess who it is.
Well, we have to check with Skull Toaster to see if that's all right.
Yeah, hold on a second. Let me see if Seth's available. He's here.
Which album features members of Trouble and Pentagram and just came out? I'm not very good. That's why you should just go to skulltoaster.com. I got the new record by The Skull, For Those Which Are Asleep. It's really, really, really good. And it's a good vinyl package. It's a good release.
Prove it.
Okay. Here's Sick of It All by The Skull.
coming back to some numbers. In 2014, there were 681 million records sold, actual pieces of vinyl, 681 million. And a decade ago, 2004, the number was 1.2 million.
That's why everyone had to wait 5 months for the Young Teachers album. And the last three albums I pressed were seriously from the time the Plant had them in their hands. This was after lacquers were cut. The Plants had them in their hands. 5 months. Long way. The first record I put out 4 years ago? Yeah, just about 4 years ago I was starting on it, the False Idol 7-inch. It was a 6 to 8 week turn time is what they told me, and I think I had it back in five weeks. It was pretty quick. And then for a long time it was right about 3 months, and the last couple records, Unteachers, The Slaves Be Sea, Grace the Thieves Split, and I don't know, something else was like 5 months. It's a long time to wait. I mean, you think,
You think why about aren't we produce we collectively as a planet? Why aren't we producing more record? What's the word I'm looking for? Pressing, like a
pressing plants,
pressing,
right?
Pressing plant. Why aren't we making more places that make records then?
Well, they are. There's a couple new ones that have opened recently, but the fact is it's a very intensive process to actually make a record, and it requires a lot of equipment, it requires a lot of setup, and to get an actual record pressing plant set up all, you know, from the ground up is rather expensive, and the physical medium of vinyl is much more expensive to produce, obviously, than digital, even though iTunes takes almost all that money. And obviously much more expensive than CDs. Mm-hmm. And so there's less profit to be made. So record companies have to spend a lot of money to make less profit. That's why there's not just record plants popping up everywhere, even though there are some here and there. And largely it's still considered a fad. And I suspect that's accurate. I suspect it is a fad. I suspect in a few years it's going to die back down. I don't think it'll ever go away. It's going to die back down, though, because it is. I mean, let's face it, it is a fad at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's not going to jump another 500-600 million a year in a couple more years, right? That growth can't keep happening, right?
I would certainly think not, but I mean, what do I know? I'm some dude who lives in the middle of nowhere and, you know, works a blue collar construction job and tries to put out a record every now and then.
If you did have the answer, you'd be a millionaire. So.
Precisely.
Yeah.
But yeah, it takes a long time. I get emails, I get questions, I get texts, phone calls all the time. Hey, so and so gave me your number, and you know, how much does it cost to make vinyls? I get that question all the time.
Vinyls?
Yeah,
that's easy.
And it takes a long time, and there's a lot of things before you even get to the actual pressing of it. People don't realize that this is something we went through with the Young Teachers album, that you really don't want to push past 20 minutes aside. And the guy I use for almost all my lacquers, his name is Dave at Lucky Lacquers. I've had a great experience with him. He's done most of the Veritas vinyl releases. He really recommends more like 18. He'll cut it longer. But if you listen to things like, I don't have a copy of it, but I've heard from a lot of people that like the Believer LP presses were too long, and they're quiet and they're noisy and they're kind of flat. And so you have to plan ahead as you're, when it even comes down to like recording the music and planning out your release, because 18 minutes per side, you know, that's much more limiting. If you have 5-6 minute songs, and you know, you have to be able to balance it out. You can't just fit in that 36 to 40 minutes. It has to be balanced out. So before you even start working on it, you have to have that in mind. And a 7-inch, that's the other question I get all the time, is how much time can I fit on vinyls? And you know, a 7-inch, it's about 5.5 minutes per side, max 6. Some people will cut them a lot longer. They just start to really taper off in sound quality. So, record your songs, get your time limits in place. If you have a lacquer guy or if you have a pressing plant, ask them what they recommend and stick to that. But don't let that be a surprise when you go to make your record.
That's fascinating. Like the idea of limitations like that. Because with a CD, it's just like, whatever, we have an hour.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you don't need 13 songs on this album, please.
Well, I remember CDs for a while, they were like expanding their time. Wasn't, does 73 minutes ring a bell to anybody?
80 minutes.
No.
Was it 80? Okay.
It used to be 74.
I remember Dream Theater playing one of their concept albums where it's the entire freaking album. It's one giant song. But they, when they went to release it, they actually stopped at one point. They stopped the, you know, the hour and a, you know, the 2 hour song, because they had to, because they were releasing it, they were releasing it as a live album, and they had to cut it somewhere so that the CD didn't just and stop, you know what I mean? So that's just what digital format could do to press the vinyl format. Like you said, 18 minutes, we took it all the way to 80. Now it's unlimited. You can record for 2 hours. You can babble on a podcast for 2 hours and record it with no breaks. You know, we're just getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and we can do anything we want for as long as we want. Yet what people are buying is smaller and smaller and smaller, and it's costing less and less and less to put it out there, and they're making more and more and more on it and not giving it to the artist. Everything is going backwards. Everything is going. I'm hopeless with this entire situation. I don't think I understand it enough. And if I had people sit down and tell me that, no, I'm in the industry and let me explain why things are looking up, I would think they're lying to me. They're just saying that to sell records.
Dogs and cats living together in perfect harmony.
Exactly. I just think the whole thing is falling apart. And I'm glad to see this resurgence on the underground kind of stuff where it's like, we're just going to do things ourselves. I'm not trying to sound like some hipster DIY guy. I just, the big thing isn't working anymore. Obviously. Look at the numbers. Seth, you know the numbers. You're in this stuff all the time.
Yeah, you have all this press. You have all this coverage, this, that, and the other. It's on the cover of this. It's got featured on this website in the first week. It's like, oh, 2,800 albums sold.
Right.
Oh, okay. All right.
2,800.
Travis and I, we were talking about Jamie Josta's podcast where he talked to Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses, and they were both talking about, you know, the touring market, you know, is saturated.
Oversaturated. Oversaturated. Yeah.
So it's even harder to make money there now.
It's I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like what's going on out there, Jesse. Fix it.
Make it work.
It is difficult, and it's hard as a small label. It's hard too because the cost to press 300 records is not a lot less than 1,000 records. When you have, you know, Veritas Vinyl obviously has a niche that appeals to very little people, you know, largely Christian punk and metal type stuff on vinyl. I could not have picked a narrower demographic, I don't think. But yeah.
But I think that's better because trying to appeal to everybody, like, you know, oh, I want everybody, like everybody that loves melodic hardcore. Yeah, good luck. Like, at least you narrowed it down a bit.
Yeah. I mean, I've narrowed it down, but I feel pretty lucky to have a bunch of weird bands. Like, Easter Teeth doesn't fit in any kind of a genre, you know, and then anyway, I digress. Side note. Before we finish talking about the length of albums, all you noise rockers out there, no more like 23-minute songs of just feedback. I mean, you're going to pay $3,000 to press an LP of 20 minutes per side of feedback. Come on. Let's start working on the songs again.
Amen.
Songs. Songs. What are they?
The first thing that happens when you make a record is... let me back up. The first thing that happens is you record your songs in appropriate time lengths for the medium you have chosen to release your music on. The second thing you need to do is please, 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 please master it specifically for vinyl. So many people take their songs, and they go, oh, I want this to sound loud and bassy, and I want this to be hot. And they get something that just is peaking out and is overcompressed and sounds like garbage. And I'm not a sound engineer. I don't really know how to make it sound good. But get somebody who does. Lucky Lackers, he does most of the mastering for vinyl for Veritas. And he does a great job, but it's because it's specific to vinyl. If you want your release to sound good for digital and you don't want to pay to have it mastered again, it's going to make the record sound bad and you're going to waste your like $3,000+ on your LP because you wanted the digital to sound slightly louder because you're in the middle of that loudness battle that everybody seems to be in. And that's ridiculous. Your vinyl specific, if you have to only do one master, do the vinyl specific master and release it on digital. it'll sound fine. If you do the opposite and you take your digital specific super hot bassy whatever master and you try to put it on vinyl, it's going to kind of ruin the vinyl.
Yep, that's exactly what I'm not trying to plug here or anything, but I'm gonna. But when we did the Unteachers album, we went to Steve Austin of Today Is the Day, and he told Steve Austin, not the wrestler, told Steven of Unteachers. Anybody confused yet? That's pretty much exactly right. Like if you master this to make the digital thing sound as do the whole the sound wall kind of a thing, make it as loud as you can, and then try to press the vinyl, it's going to sound ridiculous. If you do the vinyl thing and basically go the other way around, it'll sound fine. And we were like, okay, man, you're the man. So, and he did. I think he did a fantastic job. And I mean, he does that. He has a studio. That's what he does. You know, when he's not on tour, he masters that kind of, he knows how to get around that kind of stuff. So I'll back you up on that.
That's the thing. I was listening to people who really know what they're talking about, and he certainly does. And he did do a great job on that album. The recording was good. It'd be interesting, you know, maybe we should do something sometime where we play the mixes from Brad, and then we play the vinyl master, and then somehow we play the vinyl, because it's interesting the way you get the mixes and they sound good. You could tell it was a home studio, but it was still good. And then Steve did his thing, and you listen to those just rough vinyl mixes, and it kind of does sound a little bit flat. Your first inclination is, oh man, we got to beef this up. But when it gets put on the lacquer and when it gets made into a record and you put it on your stereo, the vinyl, it sounds so full compared to the digital. And we had the digital mastered for a digital release as well. I don't know if that made sense. I might have screwed something up when I said it. But we had the vinyl. We paid the good money to have the vinyl master done. We pressed it to vinyl, and it sounds amazing on vinyl. And then we had Steven had, was it Jim from Tantrum? I forget. He had, you know, a friend basically do the digital master for free, and he took Steve's great master, and he just kind of beefed it up for digital purposes. So if you need to save some money, either just use the vinyl master for digital, or pay, you know, give your friend who's got Pro Tools or, you know, an Ozone plugin on GarageBand and can just beef it up a little. But don't do the opposite, because you will ruin the, like, $3,000 to $4,000 you're probably going to spend on your stupid LP, and you'll be bummed for the rest of your life.
It sounds to me like if you want to save money, you better learn to master your own stuff.
Yeah, that, I mean, mastering is definitely, it takes somebody with a lot of skill to pull it off well, and maybe you're not the guy, but certainly don't skimp on the vinyl master, skimp on the digital master, or just release the vinyl master as your digital.
I think it's almost like with, you know, if you want a good recording, you know, you got to kind of pay someone to, or have a great hookup of someone that can record it. But as far as mastering, like, yeah, I would think too. I hear that all the time. Like, you got to send it away. You got to have someone do it.
You do. And I find it helps. I have a little bit of studio experience before all this, and I kind of have my own home studio. So I have some experience with it, but I'm really like, I'm beginner level, if that. But one thing I do notice, too, is that if I sit here and record and mix something, I'm the last person in the world who should be trying to master it, because I'm so caught, you know, like, you're so used to hearing it. And like, a fresh set of ears is worth a lot of money, in my opinion. It's worth a lot of, it does wonders for it. So don't be afraid to hand it off and try that out.
Mm-hmm.
So once you send Dave or whoever's cutting your lacquers your finished audio, what they're going to do is they have a thing called a lathe. And that's actually, it takes whatever your audio source is, be it reel to reel or a digital file or an ADAT tape, you know, whatever it is, it takes that. And through the magic of whatever, it sends these, you know, magnetic signals through to this needle that actually cuts the grooves in a piece of, you know, it's a chunk of lacquer is what it is. If you've ever had a dub plate or an acetate or I think that's the main things people call them. It smells like nail polish remover or nail polish, because that's what it is. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very fragile, but that's why it's easy to cut and you get a good crisp sound on it. What a acetate or a dub plate or a reference lacquer is used for is they actually cut it in there and they send it to you, and you can hear it costs like $100 maybe to have one of those sent to you and made, and you can hear what your mix will sound like in the vinyl format. You might have pops, you might have surface noise, things like that, because it's a really rough thing. And even just playing it once degrades the sound quality already. Like, you get like 10 to 20 plays out of these things, and then you can't even hardly hear them. Because that's not what they're made for. So anyway, you get your reference lacquer, it sounds good, you go, great, cut the real lacquer and send it to the pressing plant. They'll cut the lacquer for you, they'll send it off to the pressing plant, and what happens then is that lacquer gets coated, electroplated. I think back in the day, they actually coated them in silver. Silver's pretty expensive. I think these days it's typically nickel. I could be wrong on that. I don't know. I can't remember. But it gets coated in metal, basically. And they take that now, and they create like a reverse out of it, a stamper. So it's like a negative image of your record. And that's what then eventually gets put into the pressing machine that then actually presses the vinyl into your record. There's more steps kind of in between there, where they might do 2, 3, 4 step mastering, where they make more of those mothers so that they can keep making stampers and you don't have to recut the lacquer. But that's basically it. And then, wow. Trav, you were talking about all the different vinyl combinations and marbles and split colors and stuff. Depending on the kind of press and the kind of machinery, some of them have like a big hopper that feeds all these granules of vinyl that almost looks like, you know, little chunks of plastic, basically, because that's what it is. And sometimes that hopper will just feed it straight in, and so if you just kind of randomly mix colors in there, it might swirl it up a bit, or it might make a custom color. But the manual presses are the ones that people make all the crazy vinyl on, split colors and splatters and stuff. And they actually have the vinyl kind of heated up to where it's malleable, and they'll take a chunk of yellow vinyl and a chunk of purple vinyl and mash them together into a little disc where one side's yellow and one side's purple, and it's about the size of the label on your record. They slap a label on either side, boom, that thing presses down and spins it, and it squishes it all out flat into a record and cuts it off, and boom, there's your record.
How about that?
Yeah, it's very labor intensive. There's a whole lot of setup involved. That's why it's so expensive to do vinyl.
It's very organic, and I think it appeals to the blue collar side of me, because I've had jobs where I worked with machinery like media blasters to take off garbage. You know, when you're shooting up parts and stuff like that to clean them off, it's just chunks of plastic, and you have to have a pump that shoots it in there. And I've used lathes before. I've used this type of machinery. It just appeals to me that there's a big, giant machine and noisy, clanking machinery making something that has, you know, at the risk of sounding cheesy, something beautiful comes out of that. I think that just means something to me rather than just a digital file, because that's just a bunch of computer people moving ones and zeros around. Nothing. I can't take anything from them, because I'm talking to a man in Colorado over the phone and record. I mean, like, I get it. It's got its place. But there's just something beautiful about vinyl, where it's just like, when I open it up, it's got a smell. It smells. It just has that, I have this thing now, as opposed to I have acquired another pile of data, you know? I don't know.
It's almost a throwback to...
Well, Travis, how about that... No, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, sir.
No, you go. No, you hang up. I love you more.
Okay. No, Travis, how about that video you and me saw of No Machine? That quick little clip of them, like, cutting a piece of vinyl with a lathe and this and that and die cut, you know.
Yeah, the die cut.
Cover and all that stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, how physical and rough and... You know, and that, I mean, that couldn't be any less perfect, you know, like,
right.
But it was great, and it was a story, and it traveled well, like, and they sold a bunch, and they only had it sold for, like, 24 hours. It was rad.
Right. Yeah, I agree, and I love that. I just love the organic, mechanical side of it. There's something to that I mean, maybe that's what cassettes were doing for me at the time, too. That was also what everyone was into, but there's a piece of machinery with parts spinning and moving tape over magnetic heads, and you know, it's just like I have to push a button and clunk, and you hear the rewind, and you hear the fast forward, it gets to the end of it, and boom, and the machine says, okay, time to turn this off. There's something about that. I don't think I can put my finger on it, but going back to vinyl, I would love to take a tour. I wonder where the nearest one is to where I am.
There's actually there's several on the East Coast and in the New England type area. There, if you go to one of the plants I've used in the past, Palomino Records, it's kind of a mom and pop type shop. They have a couple short little clips on their website where they say, "Hey, here's us, you know, putting records in our manual fine built press." But the most United Records has one. I don't use them for pressing too much, but they do have on their website some videos of that. RainbowRecords.com has a ton of videos on there.
I've seen the Rainbow one, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it was on like the Discovery Channel or something, I guess. I never saw it there, but there's all kinds of cool stuff on seeing how it's actually made out there if you just Google it. And back to what you said, Trav, it's, I agree with you, that kind of factory. You know, we kind of bemoan the big factories and the industrialization of life, but it's almost a throwback to like the 50s where, you know, from our vantage point now of the future, I guess, we look back on the 50s as almost this golden era of, you know, the wonder years where dad goes and works at the factory from the time he's 18 and he retires with his pension and the family's right. All there sitting around the table for TV dinners. And it's almost got this nostalgic, wholesome thing about it.
Yeah, and there's something to be said for, you know, a small band puts out a pressing of 300 and they sell it out. They put out a second pressing and then that's gone. And then they put out a third, fourth, fifth. And Boy Sets Fire has put their original demo out, the match case thing. They're on like their 18th pressing or something. I don't know. But with digital, it's unlimited. It's however many you just keep downloading. There's no limit there. It's just bottomless. There's something to be said for like, there's only this many. This is how many we have, and then there are no more. Get them while it's hot.
Scarcity.
Yeah,
there's scarcity.
It's a sense of urgency.
Yeah,
you know, like that. No Machine. The drummer from Dillinger Escape Plan is in a project called No Machine. They released something on the internet that said, "We are taking orders for 24 hours. That's it. This product will not sell out, but you only get a 24-hour window." And they had like a clock, a ticking down clock, and it immediately made me feel like, uh-oh, I better get on this. And the next day, I decided I'm going to order this thing from my truck, you know, on my lunch break or whatever. And I had like 3 hours left, and I tried to do it. I could not get the website to work. I called my wife, who happened to be home that day, and I was like, "Hon, go on. I emailed you a link. Go online and order me this record." She's like, "Are you serious?" I'm like, "Yes, I can't order it. And we only have 3 hours. Hurry," you know? And they wound up selling like 500. I don't remember. It's between 500 and 600. It was like 538 or something like that. That's it. Those don't exist anymore. I have one. I think that's rad. I just think there's something about that. Like, na 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 na. As opposed to, yeah, everybody on the planet fell in love with this thing. Go download it so we all have it. Now it's not special anymore, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It is cool.
Let's the other question I get a lot is about costs and things. Let's take a break and play a little bit of music, and we'll come back and talk about what it costs and the couple of cost saving tips I do have to offer. Trav, what are we listening to?
I already played one. Seth, what are we listening to?
Hey, we're gonna play Theory of Ruin with a song called "Missives on a Recurring Theme." It's from 2002. It's awesome. Listen.
we talked a little bit about how to make a record, and I got wildly sidetracked on that. The other question I get the whole time, all the time, is obviously how much does it cost to make vinyls? Literally phrased like that, generic, not, hey man, what does a run of 507 inches cost? Or it's, how much does it cost to make vinyls? So I guess that's kind of an open-ended question, but I can speak.
Do you do this speech at preschools or something?
Thanks for slamming all the people that contact me.
Mr. Jeremiah, how much does it cost to make vinyl?
You, sir, are hilarious.
Second question, where do babies come from?
I think that there's a lot of... I only do small presses. The biggest press of a record I've ever done is 500. I typically do 300 because I don't sell a lot of records. I mean, I've sold out some colors and I'm close to selling out some records, but that's one thing people don't think about today is that records and physical copies don't move that well. I know a lot of bands who will do 1,000 CDs because they think, man, we're going to sell a ton. And a few years after their band breaks up, they've got 950 CDs sitting in their closet, and they're just trying to give them away. So I would suggest, especially if you're an independent musician and you're trying to put out a record on your own, do not exceed 300 to start. Unless you're world touring and you've already sold 10,000 digital downloads or something. I mean, most bands, 300 is plenty. The reason I go with 300 is because that's kind of the less than 300, the price doesn't really change. It goes down a little, but I'm trying to hit that price point to where I can sell a 7-inch for $5 or $6 and break even. If you're wanting to make money, you better press more and sell them all, or you better just sell them for more money.
Plus, may I interject, doesn't it hold some clout and some weight that you can legitimately say that you sold out of your first pressing? Like, if I buy 1,000 of them and I never get rid of them, okay. Again, the sense of urgency. I made 300 of them. First pressing sold out. Second pressing's on purple now. The green ones are gone forever. Oh, wow. This band's moving some records. I better grab one. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and actually, the Slaves BC, Grace and Thieves split LP, I just kind of worked things out with the pressing plants where they would do real small quantities of different colors without charging me an arm and a leg. And so we had 30 pressed on silver vinyl, which is really pretty much just gray. And because of Judas hanging on the front with a bag of money, 30 pieces of silver. So we did 30 on silver. And they sold out, like, within a day or two. And so we're like, the gray has sold out. And people are like, oh, dude, this album's blown up. I'm like, no, dude, we pressed 30. You know, everybody in the band got one. So we sold 20, okay? We sold 20 copies on silver in a couple days. That's
sold out. That's all I had to hear.
Right.
But still, from an editorial angle, though, from a writer angle, like, I mean, that stuff, it gets interest. Like, I mean, 20, 30, whatever. But, like, being able to say you sold... Just being able to say you sold out of anything is, like, a story these days.
I hear comedians on their podcast talk about that all the time. I'd rather do a theater tour and say that I sold out a tour than go after the bigger rooms and sell half the room. It's the same amount of tickets.
Yeah.
But I can say I sold out a tour. Oh, wow, the next time he comes to town, we better get tickets right away. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's... And actually, as far as Veritas is concerned, we're trying to kind of move towards that. We're going to start having a few more, like, cool packages where there'll be, like, a, you know, 25 of stupid, crazy vinyl, you know, splatter, whatever. I don't know exactly how it's going to work out, but we are going to be doing more like that. Not necessarily to be able to say we sell out, but just to kind of create that little bit more collectiveness about it for the collector nerds. Because I'm a record collector nerd, and I like having the limited one, and I think it's cool. So it's a way to create kind of some community within a big, wide-open thing, I think. And it gives people something to talk about. And, oh, did you get this one, or did you get that one? So that being said, press 300 copies. If you go to Rainbow Records, that's who David Lucky Lackers recommends. If you use Lucky Lackers like I recommend and you use Rainbow Records like he recommends, he has a pretty sweet hookup at Rainbow. Rainbow by itself is kind of expensive, but if you use his hookup, it's affordable. And if you then go to iloveimprint.com and have them make your 7-inch covers, you can do 307 inches for like $1,300, perhaps less. If you really skimp, you can get it down to right about $1,000.
And if you use the promotional code Veritas, you get 10%. Sorry.
This seriously sounded like a podcast ad.
Yeah.
Go ahead and just mention the code.
You can mention whatever code you want. They're not going to know what it is. David Lucky has helped me out a ton, and he's taken ignorant phone calls from me when I would call up and say, how much does vinyls cost? Or, you know, the equivalent of that question. And he'd go, dude, let me explain it to you. No, do it like this, then do it this. And he was super helpful. I Love Imprint pretty much the same way. Walt is the guy I talk to there. I mean, everybody there is great. They're cheap. Their quality is awesome. They do covers. And if you want to do a 7-inch, like, here's my cost-saving tips. Go to David Lucky Lacquers. Go to Rainbow. Rainbow won't press less than 100 colors of vinyl. You have to do, if you want to do like 3 different colors, do it. Black is cheap. Random mixed color is often the same price as black. And then a standard color is pretty affordable. When you start getting into mixed colors and things, it gets more expensive. Rainbow doesn't do splatter and stuff like that unless you're willing to do 1,000 copies or more. And then they just ship it overseas anyway. So, 100 copies each color. If you wave, there's a box you can check on the forum that says wave plate cleaning between color setup. Otherwise, they're going to charge you $75 to $100 to clean the plates in between every color. What that means is if you press white vinyl and then red vinyl, kind of the transitional period there, there's going to be a couple that are kind of swirled together. Honestly, I think that makes it more cool and you save money. So that's a good cost-saving tip right there. Skip cleaning the plates. You'll have a few mixed up colors, but that's cool, in my opinion.
Huh.
Another area that people kind of, not waste money, but if you have art that looks good in one color ink and one color paper, you can save like $100 to $200 right there because full color labels start costing more money. If you really need that full color label or whatever, then go for it. But that's a thing to keep in mind as you're kind of planning out your artwork. And then for a 7-inch covers, if you do black and white foldovers and poly bags, you can do inside outside print poly bags all shipped to your house for like $160 for 300 of them. And if you want to do like 500 covers, it's like $30 more. It's really not that much. If you do full color with a black and white insert, it's going to cost you about $300 more. That's $1 per 7-inch. Your cost has just gone up for full cover. So consider that.
Say that again.
When you're doing, if you want to jump from a one color black and white front and back 7-inch fold over cover, and you want to go up to a full color on the front and back, and then black and white on the inside, it will cost you about $300 more.
So it's a, okay. Gotcha.
And so
gotcha.
That adds, you know, that's raising the price, the cost of your 7-inch $1. So,
gotcha.
I mean, if you got to have full color artwork, cause that's how the album is, like, yeah, go for it. But just consider that as you're designing your artwork, maybe do 2 colors or something. You know, most of my favorite punk 7-inches are black and white or black and white and red. And probably because it was cheaper. Mm-hmm. So those are some pretty good cost saving tips. All that said, if you really skimp and you pay attention all the way through and you're doing this yourself, you're not a label having to pay out licensing to bands, because I give my bands copies, things like that, you can get 307 inches out for $1,000. If you want to go up from there and add bells and whistles, it's just going to cost you more. If you do all that same kind of stuff for an LP, you can do 300 LPs for about $2,500. It ends up, that's watching your budget and going through. LP covers are a little different. Full color LP cover with a black and white 11x11 two-sided insert, kind of like the Young Teacher's album. Those are pretty affordable. Full color black and white saves you like $30. So in that instance, full color is really, you know, if your artwork is calling for it, then do it. It really doesn't save you that much to go black and white. So your average release is probably going to cost you about $2,500 for 300. That's a lot of money. That's why we're saying in the beginning, get your master ready. Make sure you've got this thing planned out. You don't want to throw away $3,000 on this album that you want to hang on your wall and remember for the rest of your life. And when you look at it, you go, man, that thing kind of really turned out like garbage and it doesn't sound good.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. You know? So You got to be prepared to spend some money, because it's expensive. It just is what it is. And for example, by way of example, the Unteachers album that just came out that had all colored vinyl. It had a custom color vinyl, without the fold over clear translucent thing. Cause Stevie paid for that. I think he paid, you know, not very much for the ink and the paper, but he did all the work on that. If you were to actually hire someone to do that, it would probably add hundreds of dollars to the release, I bet. The Unteachers album cost right about $3,000 to make the album. So, FYI, know
buy
that...
One.
What's that?
So yeah. Buy one.
Buy one of each
so,
color.
So I'm just going to buy, like, the hits off of it, like $2.99 tracks.
Yeah. Now, okay. My point... excuse me. My point is that... That's how it can start to progress, you know, like the Unteachers album, not a lot of bells and whistles, but it was a two color print on the label and we had a custom color. We didn't have any black vinyl, so it was all color. And so the costs just start going up. And so keep that in mind, 300 copies, $3,000. That means your cost is $10, you know, that includes.
And they're only 12. They're $12 on the website.
Yeah. So go buy an Unteachers vinyl. It's a great album. But that just, there you go. That's. Maybe I won't get as many emails, and I've gotten to where I'm just like copy and pasting. Let's see, a couple days ago, oh, there it is. I'll copy and paste this one because I don't have time to type out a 30-minute email every time about all the steps. but there's some ideas. Look around. There's other pressing plants. There's other places. That's typically who I found to be A, good quality, B, easy to work with, and C, reasonably affordable.
My head hurts. Play some music.
All right. I got another cool record lately. I got He Whose Ox Is Gored, Rumors 7-inch. It's cool. Red vinyl. It's a color and color split. Red and pink vinyl. Turned out pretty cool. It's a great album. Here's a song from that. We'll talk to you guys next week. Peace out.